Thank you, David. That was a heck of a build-up. I mean, it can only be disappointing after that. Where did you go? You're here. Two things, David. First of all, later, you must tell me who Calvin is. And then I wish you well in your continued search to find my theological framework. I'm still looking myself, so... Do you know, when David copied to me the letter that had gone out to all of you inviting you to this conference, I nearly died. It really did. I mean, it was Nigel Pollock came last time and asked all sorts of questions, and this time Martin Fair's going to come and provide the answers. And what a build-up. I don't know if you noticed on the back, it said that after a short break I would go on to give the solution to the Middle East crisis. Well, we'll see where we get to. I just want to say a word about David, given what he said. And this would be for all those who he referred to earlier who are nearing the point of retirement. If you want to see how to be a retired minister coming into a congregation, then come and model yourself on the way David has been and the way Lorna has been. They have been fantastic. 100% supportive in every way. Encouraging and never interfering, never overstepping, none of that. They have been superb, and what a great gift from God to have such a couple coming into the congregation. And I still smile to myself to think that David's my assistant. Let me tell you what I propose to do this afternoon, then I will do it, and then afterwards I'll tell you what I did in case you missed it. I'm adopting a reasonably light approach, so please put the pencil and paper away. You probably won't need it. I know that you were listening to Sinclair this morning. I'm sure you got enough there to last you for the whole day by way of, you know, erudite theological thinking. So I'm not going down that road. I'm not doing a biblical exposition or anything like that. It's not that I don't have a Bible or don't like the Bible. I do, but I'm offering you something different this afternoon. I also appreciate that you've been probably in the sauna or the Victorian spa. And next on your agenda is a lovely dinner tonight. So I'm aiming for something hopefully lighter. With the emphasis on story rather than theory. I think I know the theory about this stuff. But if you want that, I'll refer you to a book list. This afternoon, I would rather deal with some stories. In fact, actually, just one story, and the story of our congregation in Arbroath, that's St Andrew's Church. That's the one I know. That's the story I know best, and therefore that's the one I feel most able to share with you. Just going back for a moment to David's letter. No, we don't have all the answers or the answer, so please put that thought out of your minds right away. But like probably most of you, we are stumbling across answers as we go and as we wrestle with some of the problems that Nigel Pollock brought to us at the last session. Yes, I think in part we are finding a way forward. We're not a remarkable congregation in any way. But we're unique. We're unique. That also probably describes your congregation as well. Just to give you a little bit of background and context so you'll understand what I'm saying later on and where it comes from, let me just tell you a little bit about our congregation at St Andrew's. As you saw, we are just a reasonably traditional church building and we serve the east end of Arbroath, and David gave you a wee bit of context to that. We don't have a mission statement as such, but, well, we didn't think we could want to something that was too long to remember, so we boiled it down to just three words. And in everything we do, we try to keep these three things before us. On all of our publications, you'll see that written there. Welcome is about us being an open community, and when it comes to telling some of the story later, you'll see that literally anyone is welcome in St Andrew's Church. And we gather to worship. We do lots of stuff, but take that away and there's really nothing left that would deserve us being called church. So worship is absolutely central. But not just as an end in itself, but that so that we might be equipped and encouraged to thereafter witness to what we have heard in the gospel. What else about our church? Well, in recent years we have employed a ministry team, and that has been hugely, I think, instrumental in where we now are. I was at the point when I felt myself to be pulled in so many different directions that I wasn't giving anything the proper attention that it required. And so in the sort of late 1990s, we began to consider how we might deal with that. We are not a rich congregation, let me put that right up front. We have no reserves to speak of, and we haven't inherited an old manse that we were able to sell for £250,000. The biggest legacy we've had in 14 years was £1,000. We have no money put aside. So when we began to think of ministry team and employing staff, the question was how to fund it. So there was a big job needing to be done there about selling that vision to the congregation. But thereafter, the commitment has been fantastic. And the folks are coming up with £10,000 a year over and above their givings to make possible a ministry team. We then trust fund the other money into it. So we have Sheila, who is our youth worker. I could have gone the world over and would not have been able to headhunt a more able ministry team than we have at the church. And the beauty of it is that it has at last allowed me to do what I should be doing, which is to lead the congregation and to be its preacher and teacher. And I feel now that's what I'm doing with these other people on board. So Sheila is our youth worker. Alison, who's doing the PowerPoint today, is our administrator. And despite what I would say about the other ones, if you took Alison away from me tomorrow, it would be disaster. It really would. And that's not just because she's in the room. Who else? Audrey's our session clerk. Not paid, of course, but very much part of the ministry team. We have Linda, who immigrated to Arbroath from Sydney. I know most people do it the other way around. She's been a godsend. She reaches out into the community. She's involved in meeting the needs of the most disadvantaged members of the community in Arbroath. And you know something? The more you're engaged in that kind of work, the better the credibility your congregation begins to get. So Linda's been instrumental in getting us engaged in the community. And then the last member of the team, you see him there looking upward. So what is it they say? So concentrated in heaven, no earthly good, something like that. Well, not true at all. And what a great guy, as I said earlier, to have as your assistant. So having a ministry team has been crucial to where we now are as a congregation. It has helped us to grow. There's no question about that. What's our congregation like? We can respond to that fairly accurately because every year we hold a census. We do it in September. We reckon that to be a kind of neutral month. It's not, there's no major festival there, and neither is there a holiday. It's just kind of average. And every Sunday and every Wednesday when we worship as well, we count heads and we divide up men, women into age groups, all of that stuff. And these results we've been doing now for 5 years. And it really does begin to give us a picture of who our congregation is Sunday by Sunday. And that's so important to know as you prepare to minister to them. So at our most recent census this September, these are the kinds of statistics we were coming up with to give you an idea of what we're working with. When we're averaging exactly 300 on a Sunday morning, when you factor in our Wednesday service, it's about 350 who are worshipping weekly. mostly women, three women to every one man. That's probably replicated across most churches, I would think. Nearly a quarter of our worshipping congregation is under 16. That's probably a higher percentage than in most places, I would think. And thereafter, exactly 50% of them are between 18 and 65. And again, that's good, that's strong, leaving about another quarter who are in the retired age group. Now, David has mentioned the red tops, but we know this kind of information as well because we are surveying this. We know they're reading the Courier in the main, or a red top. We know they're watching soap operas. We know they are listening to Radio Tay, as opposed to Classic FM. And this kind of information helps us to understand well who the people are that are gathering week by week to worship. Now, from the kind of census and survey information that we've done, we've sort of built a composite person of our church. Some of you who know Rick Warden's work will know Saddleback Sam. Ever heard of him? This is Arbroath Annie. And this is kind of who we're focused on. Now, as I'm going to go on and say later, we have a very diverse congregation. But if I was to just to sum it up into one person, then it's Arbroath Annie. She listens to popular music as opposed to classical. She's lower middle class, if you want to apply socioeconomic terms. She left school at 16. What does she worry about? Money, family, and health. We know that. We survey and we ask people. She stopped after Sunday school, but is now back. She's 30-something. She likes going out on the weekend to Witherspoon's for social drinks. That's the kind of person that sums up the gathering that we have at this point in time in St Andrews. A little bit more about our context, where we're at the moment. I think this tells you a lot about our congregation as well. We have really developed an outward-looking focus in the last few years. As I said, we are not a wealthy congregation, but the commitment levels have done that. And in the last 3.5 years, folks have gifted, not by fundraising events, but by direct giving, close on £50,000 now for our overseas project in Cambodia in the last 3 years, which previously our overseas giving was a retirement offering at harvest time, and it was £400 to £500, and we were pleased with that. And in the last few years, it has just done that. The commitment levels have grown and grown. And it was my great privilege earlier, just last year in November, to visit Cambodia and to see the children and young people and the families that we were working among and the projects that we were involved in, and seeing the kind of difference that our money's making. I'm going to go on and speak about this guy on the left later today. His name is Jim. Jim's a very new Christian. I took him out to Cambodia with me. And in the middle of the Sunday morning service that we shared over there, which was under a blue tarpaulin, in 100 degrees heat, in humidity that was over 90%, the service started at 8 o'clock in the morning. We left at 25 to 12. It was still going strong. And in the midst of all of that, each of us who was on tour was asked to get up and speak and bring a message. Now, Jim's a brand new Christian. He's never had opportunity to do anything like that. And there he was, given a mic. And boy, did he rise to the challenge. And this was the interpreter beside him. And Jim explained how he had found Christ and the difference that had made in his life. And after he'd spoken, the interpreter said, "Is there anybody here?" And we're right out in the wilds of the jungle in Cambodia. Anybody here who today would like to meet Christ like Jim? And a young woman steps forward from the crowd and asks for that. And this young man from my church had that opportunity to lead her to faith, you know, by prayer. What a moment for him. And this is And the way he's been built up in faith has been fantastic. Brand new Christian and coming on leaps and bounds. So that kind of tells you a little bit about where St. Andrew's Church is, what's important to us, what our values are, where we are, and hopefully something of where we're going. Just to give me an idea, who all heard Nigel Pollock's presentation at the last meeting of this gathering? Right, okay, quite a bunch. I just got his PowerPoint presentation and I've taken out some of his slides to very briefly summarise the main thesis that he had that day. Of course, he began by this kind of thing, that our population is a little over 5 million, that there are just over 1 million young adults in the country, but that very few of them come to church. Well, I think we all know that, no rocket science there. He then went on to ask, are those 18 to 30-year-olds, or 30-somethings, less spiritual? Actually, he defined it 18 to 39. And he described it as the missing generation, and that's really what we're going to pick up with today. He said this of that generation, they're generally distrustful of authority and of institutions. He said that they're not big into joining and that they think our faith belongs in a museum. Okay, so that's roughly what Nigel was saying, that there is a missing generation, and he tried to say why that is that they're missing. Well, what I want to do today is to reframe that question. And rather than ask, why are they not coming to church? Why do we not have them? I'm going to ask, why do they come to church? Those that we have. Why do they come? To take a more positive look at it. And maybe from their stories and from their experience, we can draw the conclusions that will help us to more effectively minister to that generation. As I said, just for clarity of terms, Nigel described this missing generation as those between 18 and 39. You could argue about the definition. To be honest, when I read it first, the missing generation, my response was, which one? Which missing generation? I mean, the primary schools are missing from our churches, the secondary schools. Even retired folks are missing from our churches. There are missing generations all the way through the age spectrum in our situation today. But focusing for now on those between 18 and their 40th birthday. Why do people come to church? In our day, what is it that is attracting people to church? What have those churches that are growing got going for them? Now, in a moment, I'm going to give you the answer to that question. But maybe just for a couple of minutes, turn to your neighbours, just exactly where you are, and just brainstorm for a moment what you think those factors might be that, generally speaking, are present in churches that are growing, in churches that are attracting people to them in this day and age. Have a wee think, just quickly, brainstorm a few ideas. Factors in growing churches. Well, can we gather our thoughts again towards the front? I'm sure that many of you will have come up with the kinds of things that have been that are going to be presented here. This is based on research done by the Christian Research Association, who are the leading such body in the UK at this time. Now, these 8 factors are coming in order. In other words, the first being the most important one based on the research. This kind of stuff should be right here. We should all know this. Really important as we design our churches that we understand what it is that people are looking for. So, number one, relevance of preaching. I don't know how many would have thought that would be top of the list. It really surprised me. But there you go. Relevance of preaching. Not just preaching, relevance of preaching. Sometimes people say, oh, the Gospels are already relevant. You don't have to make it relevant. I agree, but some of the preaching I hear is far from it. It needs to tie up with people's lives. Simple as that. Second thing, quality of worship. I'm afraid to say too much of what we pass off as worship is not the best that we can do. It's kind of shoddy and like it was prepared on the back of an envelope at 10:30. That won't wash. People are attracted to that which is done well. That's not to say it's not spirit-filled. Of course it is, but it's still got to be the very best that we can do, and that means quality. Number three, friendliness of the people. I guess that speaks for itself. When we were just before I took up my charge at Arbroath, I spent 6 months in Dundee. Prior to that, I had been with the Church of Scotland 2 years in Bermuda. And they decided that after that, I needed a kind of settling in period again before taking up my own charge in Scotland. So they sent me to Dundee. I think it was a kind of revenge. They were bitter that I got to go to Bermuda. So I had 6 months in Dundee. And that was I'm not going to name the church, but it was the singularly most unfriendly place I have ever been in my life. Never mind unfriendly church, anywhere. My wife was with me, and she, the first week, went to sit in one of the pews. Two other ladies in the pew, nobody even made eye contact, never mind spoke to her. So a couple of weeks with this going by, she broke the ice and introduced herself to the person next, who just about fell over that she had her personal space invaded by someone wanting to say hello. And then Elaine took it further and introduced this one to the next one, who it turned out had been together in that pew for years and had never known who each other was. Folks, it's a laugh, but it's pathetic and it is sad. And if that is what church is, turn the lights out, lock the doors and pack it up. It won't wash. Number four, presence of people of all ages. Now, this is interesting, and it's easier said than done, because if your church is aged, then, well, of course, you would like there to be people of all ages. But the bottom line is, if there is, then it feels good for people walking in. They get the sense that somewhere in this gathering, I fit. And that's what I love about St. Andrew's Church in Arbroath. You walk in Sunday morning, there's a rabble. There's little kids, toddlers that have just learned to walk. They're running up, climbing the pulpit steps all over. And there's old Mrs. McKenzie, who's 96 and never misses a week. And there's everything in between. And it feels good. And that's attractive to people as they come in as visitors or seekers. Number five. This kind of runs contrary to three in a way, and it requires for great sensitivity, opportunity to be anonymous if desired. In other words, the first week somebody shows up, don't try and press gang them to be Sunday school teachers. Okay? Don't kill them with friendliness. It might be somebody is really cracked up in life, very broken. They just want to sit in the back row and be themselves. Let them be themselves. Okay, it's a fine balance. Next thing, the possibility of belonging to a family. It goes with friendliness of the people. I think this is so important. 1/3 of people in Scotland today live alone. And the trend will take that to 1/2 of our population within the next generation, who will be living alone. That's a staggering statistic. Am I right in saying it says in the Bible it is not good for man to be alone? So somewhere we're going to need that place to belong. And the church is so well placed to be that place. We can be family, we can be that to which people belong if we get it right. the warmth and the welcome again goes with the friendliness and all of that. But here's another little interesting statistic we refer to as the 7-second rule. Again, from the Christian Research Association. As a visitor climbs up the steps at the front of your church, they will decide within 7 seconds if they reckon they're going to come back. That means it is vital that you get the right people on the door on Sunday morning. Don't call them door duty people or something like that. They're not. They're welcomers. And you need people who can welcome, as opposed to handing out copies of the hymn book. That's a menial task. Anyone can do that. Get people who are going to make an impact within 7 seconds at your door. Strong-armed people, given the complaints about the new hymn book as they give them out. And the last one, a range of children's programs. We're seeing that to be true time and time again, that folks coming into the town with kids, looking for a church, are coming to us because we offer a range of options for the nurture of their children. If you go and do this in America, do you know what number one is in the list? Car park. And that's the truth. Good car parking facilities. But we're not America, we're the UK, and this is what people are saying in this country. We need to know this. And our churches need to reflect these kinds of things, I'm sure about that. Now, this research wasn't just applied to 18 to 39-year-olds, but I am 100% sure that it applies to them well and truly. Okay? And we have worked so hard in our church to make sure that it is this kind of gathering. And I'm sure there are rewards coming from that. Let's just take a moment to pick up one or two of these things. Relevance of preaching. As I said, it's got to relate to real life. Folks have got to sense that what they hear on Sunday morning is applicable to what they'll be doing on Monday morning. Now, you may be the kind of minister who's going to do a kind of 3-year series of sermons on finding traces of Christ in 2 Chronicles or some such obscure topic. Go for it. But you better make sure it connects with their lives. Otherwise, you might as well talk about anything. Stamp collecting, or pottery from the Minoan age, or something like that. If it doesn't connect with their lives, it's not going to wash. It's got to be clear. I mean, hey, who needs to say that time over? But, you know, less is often more. Just make sure it is crystal clear so that folks know what you're saying. As David said of me, I just make one point and then I make it 10 times. And on one of those occasions, folks click and see what was being said. We have got a huge number of people now in our church who know nothing of the Christian faith. I mean, they're beginning to pick it up bit by bit, but they've no background. So when I start on Sunday morning, I'm starting and I'm thinking in my head about those who know nothing. And even if there's only 5 people come to your church on one morning who know nothing, you better make that sermon for them. Those who are mature in the faith just better get used to it. They just better get used to making concessions. That it might not be so high-flown as they would like. But you better take it on board those who know nothing. And you better speak to them, or they'll pretty quickly leave by the back door after having come in the front one. Now, none of this means dumbing down. Can I make that clear? None of it means dumbing down. And none of it means somehow backing off from the gospel. On the contrary, our experience has been that folks coming seeking, particularly in that generation, they want something crystal clear. They want to know what it is. Let me share with you an article that I found in the Scotsman just after New Year. Some of you might have seen it, written by a person, Fiona Leith. Here's what she said. "My strongest but still embarrassing scant understanding of what the church can provide mainly stems from the scattering of funerals I've attended, that and the few brownie attendances when I was younger. While I'm sure that doesn't distinguish me from the majority of 20-somethings, it is something that has increasingly played on my mind, particularly this past year. It may be a trivialising understanding to say that religion loomed large over world events in 2005, but the biblical nature of the environmental disasters that took place had a shocking effect on people like me. We were forced to attempt explanations for things that were inexplicable. On a personal level, life hasn't been happy for me. It's been a period in my life when I've been searching for a lot of answers from fewer and fewer reliable sources." This is somebody from way without the church, searching for answers from fewer and fewer reliable sources. We need to be one of those reliable sources. So clearly presenting the gospel. She says this, "So having looked in various locations and for various reasons for some form of affinity with religion, but failing miserably, it almost knocked me off my feet when I realised that I'd come the closest yet in the little town of Innerleithen in Peeblesshire last weekend." I've never even heard of it. Maybe some of you come from that direction. She finishes up, "I went to church on Christmas Day for the first time in my life." She goes on to say how she found it, concluding with this, "The minister was talking about my life." Now, never mind that little village in Peeblesshire. That's got to be your church and my church and every church. So that someday coming in with no background, we'll hear something that matters. A reliable source to help her make sense of the world and of her life. If it doesn't apply to her, she will not be back. Let me go on now and just take a break, as much for me as for you from The Voice, and show you an example of a particular piece that we used in worship quite recently. And I think what it displays is two things. One, that it's got to be relevant to what's going on in the world. And two, that often the means of communication need to be appropriate for the folks who are going to be gathering. So I'll ask Stephen to run the CD and you'll get a flavour of what we had that particular Sunday morning a few weeks ago.
But my life is in your hands. And
We'd been speaking about forgiveness that morning, and it was just the Sunday after Anthony Walker's killers had been jailed. And this is what I mean by linking in our message with what's going on in life, because if you saw or heard his mother on the 6 o'clock news on the night, she stood there and gave the most fantastic Christian witness of forgiveness. And on the Sunday morning, following the preaching and then following this just brief song and presentation, we had people who went through life-changing moments in church that morning. Folks who found themselves forgiving abusers from days gone by, and various situations who, in the course of the service and following the preaching, spoke of a real full-on spiritual experience of things being lifted from them. So in all this talk about making preaching relevant, we're not talking about, you know, anything other than the heart of the gospel, but doing it in such a way that people get it. Worship, that's preaching particularly. Let's say something just about worship. Alison will bring the slides back up in a second. We're all in different contexts and different churches all over. All our churches look different. But for me, every service should have these kinds of factors in it. And certainly, if we want it to be able to speak to that so-called missing generation. Celebratory. We've got good news and mustn't forget it. And that's not to say it's all going to be light and frothy and birthday cakes, but it should be joyous. Somewhere in any Sunday morning, there should be people's hearts lifted up, giving thanks. Cerebral and sensual. My hunch is that for the last period of our history, we've been way too far on the cerebral. Just addressing people up here. Now, I'm not saying drop that and just go for the feelings. That's a bad mistake to make. But let's remember that people have feelings and have got emotions, and people have hearts just as much as heads. And that far too much worship that I see doesn't take that into account. We need people crying on Sunday mornings, much more so. Okay, number three. I guess this just picks up what we've been speaking about a minute ago. Of course, what we stand for is unchanging, but let's make sure it applies to this day. And number four, surprising. I think, again, by way of criticism, too much of what we do is predictable. And the problem with that is, folk don't have to come on Sunday morning because they know they won't have missed anything. It'll have only been what was on last week and what's going to be on next week anyway. I think if there's one thing we've got right at St Andrews, it is that it's surprising. People come with a sense of expectation. What is it going to be like today? And it's never the same. The order of service changes. The flow of things changes. My four-year-old, or he was four-year-old at the time, son Callum, years ago I said to him, what do you want to be when you grow up? And he said, I want to be like you, Dad, a minister. So trying to dissuade him, I said, but do you know what that means? Do you know what that I'm involved in? And he came away with what I think is theologically profound. He said, "You're the man who brings the people their surprises." Now, I think he meant like the children's address when you've got a bag under the table or something like that. But I wrote it down and I have it on my desk. And as I'm preparing worship week by week, I look at that little plaque and I say, I've got to be the man who brings the people their surprises. God is always doing something new. So why should the church always be the same? Of course, we need the comfort of what's always been, but also the freshness and the new expression. Participatory. If there's one thing about that so-called missing generation, they want to be involved. And we're absolutely clear about this. We say that no one comes to be a spectator. You are all here to worship. This does not mean that somebody gets up and reads the lesson. That's usually what passes off for, oh, we've got a participation in our church, and it's a rota of the elders who read out the New Testament lesson or something like that. That's not participation. That still leaves everyone else spectating. This is about the whole atmosphere of worship. This is about everybody coming and understanding that their presence is important. This is about giving people a chance to have their questions answered and giving them a chance to speak. This is about letting people go away thinking that they were part of something. And then the last one of these, I know this may be heretical to some, enjoyable. Is there a problem with that? I mean, is it okay for people to go away afterwards and say, I really enjoyed that today? Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that we should design worship and our first criteria should be, let's make it enjoyable. But I think if everything else is right, then it will be enjoyable. It will be good. People will leave feeling better than when they came. I don't think there's a problem with that. Nigel asked the question, we put one of his slides up, are people less spiritual? Is that age group less spiritual? I've got to answer that with a resounding no. I don't know what you said on the day, but hopefully it was the same. People are no less spiritual. We're seeing example after example of people in that age group who are definitely looking for that spiritual aspect to life. And more beginning to think that the church might be a place. That's about how you make your church. Now, if it's not, then here's a thought for you. Do you know how these New Age fairs and psychic fairs run into town and they're in a local hotel for a weekend or something like that? Now, we guys normally run 100 miles from that all that New Age stuff. We have nothing to do with it. Well, I know some people who decided, well, if you can't beat them, join them, some Christian people. And they started going to the New Age fair, and they set up a stall, and they had above it, Psalm reading. Right? Now, everybody who came fell for it, not quite reading it properly. And they all came up and they were asked, give us a number between 1 and 150. Yeah. And then as they gave a number, they just brought a Bible out and read the Psalm to them. Now, these New Age fairs are packed out. People are seeking. We've got to just make it known that our churches are places where you can come and seek too, because that's not the general perception. Let's remember, therefore, that in our worship and all that we do in our worship, that it should be spiritual. I mean, it's so obvious to say, but has to be said. It should be a spiritual experience. I want to kind of come towards the end of it by speaking about what I think, even above all of that, is the critical factor for that generation 18 to 39. And that is that our churches genuinely be communities. And too often they're not. That's the bottom line. They're not. We spoke about, you know, this sense of people living alone and needing somewhere where they can belong. Church has got to be that. A place where folk can have real relationships. And you know, that just doesn't, it's not enough just to say that, oh, our church is friendly. That's not enough. It's got to be a place where you can make friends. That's different. I mean, we can all be friendly over a cup of tea at the end of the service. But folks are looking for friends. And our churches have got to be the place where they can find them. Or they won't keep coming. And you know, once you get some of that going, just go back previously for a moment, Alison, would you? Just to the next year. Jenny and Kirsty, they're two of our brightest young people. I think they're both 19. But you know, when you've got these kind of people coming along, it does begin to spin off to their friends and others around them. And the next guy, it's quite funny, this is Dale. And when I went in to get his photograph, he says, I want more seen dead and anything to do with your church. He's not raised in church families, nothing to do with it whatsoever. But his friendship with these girls and with some of the others is bit by bit drawing him in. He's coming to our sort of young adults now on Sunday nights. He's coming to our monthly kind of contemporary worship now, just bit by bit coming in. And my prediction is within 6 months he'll have taken that zip down. Because he's looking. He's looking for something. That's absolutely for sure. So, real community church needs to be. That's what that generation is looking for. A place to make friends, not just a friendly place. A place to meet people, not just a place with meetings. I mean, boy, do our churches have meetings. But we need to meet. That's what community is. And here's the other thing I think is important to say, at least it's been our experience. I think what is brilliant about our church is that everybody is held together in the one community. We've not said that we're going to have a youth stream and then a missing generation stream. Everything's together. We haven't said, well, let's have a contemporary service early on Sunday morning for those who like that kind of thing, and then later on we'll have a traditional one, and so we break down. Everything that we do is held together in the one community. Now, here comes my one bit of theology for the day. God is community. Is that not what the Trinity teaches us? That he himself in the Godhead is perfect community. Now, if we can't work out ways of making our churches, therefore, communities, then, you know, we're nowhere. So I think really what appeals to those younger folks coming into our church is that it is community. And that they're alongside kids and older adults and grandparents and everyone else into the bargain. Alison, our administrator, we were big-hearted and gave her the weekend off of New Year's Day. And she went down to Edinburgh for family and went to Charlotte Chapel, the Baptist Church in Edinburgh, on the Sunday morning. And she was... There's nobody here from there, is there? Okay. Just the minister. Yeah, just the minister. You are joking. Former minister. Well, the present minister, or someone, whoever was speaking that morning, he said, and we find this quite amusing, it was so different to our context. He said, where else gathered would you find such a diverse gathering of people? And he said, look around you, we've got lawyers, barristers, doctors. I'm thinking, well, maybe in Edinburgh city centre. But come to our church and you really have diversity. And this is what I mean by saying it is truly community. And I think that is chiefly what makes it attractive to people. I mean, we've got our lawyers. Susan's 30. We've got our doctors. Ruluca is from Romania. She's 31. Came to the church, our church, because she was looking for stuff for the kids. So we've got lawyers and doctors. We've got teachers. We've got salesmen. We've got social workers. We've got fish merchants, of course, it's our broth. We've got welders. We've got childminders. We've got cleaners. We've got the girl who works in the optician shop just down the high street. We've got the girl who makes your appointments at the Arbroath Infirmary. We've got Nicola, who has learning difficulties and doesn't understand a thing that's said on Sunday morning, but boy, has she been accepted in our family. It's community. It's the first time in her life people have cared about her and have made her feel that she's important as anybody else. And we've got Alan Lowe, who sweeps the streets in Arbroath. I bet you don't have that in Charlotte Chapel. Well, maybe they do. But that's diversity. And the wonderful thing is that they're all held together. That's what community is. They worship together. They are in groups together, and so on and so on. Do you know, we really need to affirm people. And when I was speaking about the great mix of people that we've got in our church and how they're all made to belong. First time I met Leslie, she's 29. First time I met her was at a barbecue. And it was the PTA had organised the barbecue. And quite a bunch of people had gone back to someone's house after it, and we were invited. I was a little late and got there, and Leslie had just been sick all over the living room floor and was sick about another three times before she got to the loo. She was out her head. You know, this was a PTA barbecue, but they'd gone back for drinks and she'd just got out her head. You go back at 2 years, Leslie's life was falling apart. She's in all kinds of relationships, damaging relationships. She's got two kids by different guys. She was doing herself in bit by bit. We accepted her into our family. Now she never misses a Sunday. Never misses a Sunday. She brings her kids along and we love her to bits. And there's got to be a place for Leslie's in your family. And remember, he died while we were still sinners. So we don't say to Leslie, sort yourself out, and then you can maybe come to our church. She's okay. And God will sort her out once she gets into church. I really have a big heart for Emma. It's our wee girl, Caitlin. Emma's just a lovely girl. Her husband walked out on her when little Caitlin, I think Emma was about 6 months pregnant or something like that. Her husband walked out on her. She was broken. devastated. And in the time since, she has been put all the barriers up. She didn't want to know about God, about church. She didn't want any possibility of being hurt again. But you know, in the last few weeks and couple of months, she's been coming back and into church. And she's been loved there, and she's been welcomed there. And she's finding again what it means to belong and to be somebody when the world walked out on her and told her that she was nothing. Everybody who's been up in this selection of pictures has a story to tell. They're all between 18 and 39. And some of the stories, like hers, I'm not going to tell you because it's too private. But by and large, they're not in our churches because they feel our churches are not for them because of what's happened. We've got to make them communities that are for everybody. How do we get them? Last thing, by invitation. So often by invitation. You can have Billy Graham over or whoever you want and hold a huge rally, but there is still nothing to beat someone in your church asking someone to come. Rick Warren again, he has 10 reasons why your church isn't growing. I mean, it's American, it has to be 10 points or something like that. His number one is, folks in your church aren't inviting their friends. See Jane, there on the left, she's brilliant, she's my star. We have about four times every year, we have specific guest services when we really encourage them to bring a friend. And every single guest service, she's brought a friend or friends. She's in that age group. She's in her early 30s. She loves her church. She goes to work, she talks about her church. She shares what she heard on Sunday morning. She talks it up. And in the next picture, there's Chris and Carolyn. They are really committed now in the faith. They were asked to come to one of the guest services by Jane in the last picture. So, you know, these communities can be born and these communities can grow. And one of the keys to that is going to be by invitation. And there's Neil. He's a BT engineer. Nothing to do with church until someone asked him to come. He came. He's an elder. In his 30s. That's Avril. She came because she was asked. Who knows Rab? Some of you know Rab, don't you? Yeah, yeah, one or two of you. He's SU worker and stuff like that. Do you know, going back to Nigel Pollock's thing about the post-modern analysis of this generation. They don't join things, they're wary of institutions, they won't commit and so on. They will commit if you give them something to commit to. Give them a big enough story and they'll read it. I mean, there's a great couple. Some of you know Rab and Morag. But in terms of the commitment, they just moved. I mean, they've been coming to our church. They lived in another town in Angus, but they've just moved into the town because they wanted to be more fully involved and couldn't do that from a distance. There's commitment out there if we give folks the thing to commit to. And then, last couple, Jim and Tracy. Jim's got breach of the peace convictions. You know, all sorts of stuff going on in his previous life. And got invited to the church a few years back now for a baptism. He was so far from Christ as hell is. He knew nothing and didn't want to know anything. And there I was, I had him in Cambodia a couple of months ago. and he was leading someone to Christ. What an encouragement folks like that are. Tracy to his wife, who's come to faith and is just a shining light to folks. Folks in that so-called missing generation. And in a very last picture, just a kind of montage, maybe, oh yeah, of all these different folks. I just got the photographs of the ones I could grab on Sunday morning. Oh, okay, we're not going to get it, fair enough, of those. But we've got a lot in that age group. And my sense is that what is absolutely key to them is community. Is that there's something real and authentic that they can believe in and be part of. And the good news is once you get that ball rolling, it continues to roll. And folks are attracted to it. Our congregation is growing. Our census tells us that. So 5 years we've been doing it, our worshipping congregation has grown every year. Not spectacularly. I mean, Bill Hybels and Rick Warren haven't come to see what we're doing yet. But we're growing. And I think it's because what we have is a real community. What that word really means. And folks are drawn to that. So that's our story. It's just one church. It's not the story. And you've all got churches, and probably half of you have got other stories equally, you know, similar to ours or different things. So, you know, that's what I said at the beginning. Don't get your pens and pencils out and things that there'll be lots of, think there's lots of stuff to write down. But, yeah, that's one story of one church that is going somewhere. And let's pray and look for much more of it in the days to come around our country, that we might, person by person, begin to reclaim it for our Lord. Thank you very much for your attention.
For those who are day visitors, all this is recorded and you can get a CD-ROM with the transparencies as well as Martin's talk, so you can go over it again. We've got, it's 20 past five, dinner is at 6:30, so we've got about 10, 15 minutes. If there are questions, I'm sure Martin will be only too pleased to try and field them. Howard?
Martin, how do we get the ball going to become more of a community? Because that seems to be the big problem getting the start.
I think that we have never majored on that one generation that we've been speaking about today. I mean, that is going well within that generation. But I don't think we should be thinking of it, in compartments like that. I think, this is going to be hard to take. I think we've got to get the whole congregation right. Now, we started, I think, majoring on children's work. But you will not get the children's work right unless the older people are right. And do you know what I'm saying by that? I mean, you will not get children and families beginning to come around the church until there's a wonderful sense of acceptance and welcome and all of that. So I guess what was really fortunate for us is that I came to the church as reasonably young married couple.
First charge.
And I guess we just began to live it out as much as we could. And to model it as much as we could, what we meant by it. And we began to speak about family on my very first Sunday there, and we have never stopped talking about the church being family. To the point that folks are, you know, doubtless sick to death of it, but we will not let that go. So it's talking it and talking it and talking it that this is what church is. It's preaching on Acts chapter 2 every year so that they're bored with that as well, but reminding them every year that that's what Christian community is and continuing to live it out. We've got an elderly lady just down the road from us who is ill at the moment. Every day my wife is making her dinner for her and taking it down the road. Now, I'm going to tell the folks that on Sunday morning, not to boast about us being super Christians, but so that they know this is what Christianity is. This is what's expected of you in this Christian community, that you will really live it out, not just Sunday morning, but that you'll cook dinners for the lady down the road who's not well. So, do you know, as I say, I think we just started it, Howard, and just bit by bit by bit, a little bit started and then gathered momentum from there.
I don't like contradicting my minister, but I'm going to contradict him very, very sharply. He's never, ever boring. Mike, you had your hand up.
I can see how much the team has meant to you in giving you the chance to do what really matters. Can you tell us about how does that team meet? How does it work together? And maybe where did you start with that team?
Yeah. We started with a youth worker. We employed a full-time youth worker. We thought that was the priority, and we ran with that for 4 years, pretty successfully. But then when that contract was finished and we had the opportunity to review what we wanted to do, we decided that we would employ 3 part-timers instead of 1 full-time youth worker, that we would therefore be able to explore 3 different fields rather than putting all of that extra resource into youth work. So it's a part-time youth worker, part-time pastoral assistant, part-time community outreach worker, part-time administrator, and so on. We meet together once every week, Friday morning. We share very deeply about you know, the direction of that the church is going, and about issues that are arising and things like that. I'm blessed by the quality of the people in that team, because I mean, I supervise to some extent, but they are self-starters. They are people who are so trustworthy to go and do the job that it has meant that I am really freed up to lead the congregation. And I think that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Monty, he's called David Montgomery, but his name is Monty, and he's from Northern Ireland.
Martin, could you say a little bit about your presentation style and how that has developed and whether you've had to work on that? I mean, you obviously make your one point, you make it 10 times. You obviously use audio visuals in a variety of ways, I imagine, pretty imaginatively at times. Are you naturally technological? Is this something you've had to work on? Any advice for those of us who maybe would like to be able to extend our presentation options but don't really know where to start?
Yeah, sure. No, I am not naturally gifted in that way at all. I mean, I'd far rather have a pen and paper than a computer still. But within the congregation, and probably within every congregation, there's somebody. And that's partly why Alison's here today. She is the genius in terms of technology within our church. She prepares all of the presentations. That's part of her remit. I mean, obviously, I give her the material, but then she works it up from there. So that is very much part of our Sunday morning feel and our worship feel, that there is visual presentation going along with what I say. I just think it makes sense. For people to see as well as to hear. And sometimes you can get to people with pictures, like, you know, the song we showed. I mean, that, remember what I said about cerebral and sensual? There wasn't a dry eye in church that day when we talked about Anthony Walker and his death and so on. So the presentational possibilities, you know, open up a whole new sphere. My own presentation, if I was doing this 10 years ago, I would have been up to about 3 o'clock in the morning learning the script word for word. But I guess we just become more and more familiar with the material and relaxed and hopefully confident. But I'm never in the pulpit, and it's much more informal feel of presentation than that.
Can I just give an example of his presentation? Quite early on, when Lorna and I retired, he was speaking on justification. And he showed about 3 or 4 minutes of a clip from To Kill a Mockingbird with Gregory Peck defending the black man in court. And, I mean, it was gripping stuff. And then it went off and he said, if you were in court and guilty, you'd want someone of that ability to defend you, wouldn't you? Do you know you have an advocate with God the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous? And you are guilty, but he's your advocate. And he explains so simply justification as God declaring us not guilty, but acquitted because Christ has died for us. It was superb. Next question, sorry. Yes, David.
Did you say that prayer plays any part in the development, and if so, how much?
A big part and a growing part. We now have a Wednesday evening gathering and starts in 2 hours. We'll just get back in time. A Wednesday evening gathering for prayer and Bible study. There's a Sunday morning gathering for prayer. We give out every Sunday morning an A4 side of intercession prayers for people to take home and pray through the week. And I think, whereas we've steadily been coming along, I think we're really beginning to see some decent results in the last few years. And I think, not coincidentally, that's since we've really put prayer further up the ladder of priorities.
Alistair.
It's literally a question, but a kind of comment. I found my heart much warmed by what you've said. And two things struck me very forcibly. One is your passion for the whole world, which is evident in various ways in what you said, most recently by your visit to Cambodia. And I think that that's not unconnected with life in the church at home. Mm. The other thing is to say that you probably wouldn't say it, but I think it's clear to us all that your own love must be a key element. And I suspect your wife's love is a key element in what has happened. Simply these things. Mm. Praise God.
Thank you. I think just on the point before that about the concern for the world and so on, that is important as not unconnected, because that those folk in the missing generation are passionate about the world. They want to see that the church is as well.
David Wright.
Yes, thank you, Martin. Martin, could you say something more about participation? I got your message that it's not a new token thing, but just somebody getting up to read a lesson. Therefore, it's the whole congregation. But is there somewhere between these?
How do you Yeah, I think so. I mean, quite often in the middle of a sermon, we'll actually stop and ask people, like we did a wee bit earlier, you know, when I was asking you to think of what the 8 factors were in growing church, we'll actually stop with a question and just put it to people to turn around and start talking to each other. So, I mean, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but we're going through Ephesians at the moment, and last week we were on chapter 2, the first few verses, and the last line was about the wrath of God. And this is a concept that, you know, that for a lot of them was, well, what's that? So, you know, not that we did on Sunday, but ordinarily we might stop and get people, well, what do you think that means? Or how do you feel when you hear that phrase, the wrath of God? And literally we'll just stop the sermon and people will talk to the people around them for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. Now, we don't then have a plenary session to get all the answers back, but people in that way have felt that I've got to say what I think. And other people listen to what I think. Other times we get people to, quite commonly we get people to write things down. Maybe if we're in a time of confession, we'll get people to write things down. And then if they want to come forward, and we're quite into sort of maybe movement, we've had people come forward and we'll have somebody at the front with a pitcher of water. And people have the opportunity to physically do something, wash their hands. So, I mean, these are just two things that come off the top of my head, but working hard to make sure that they're not just sitting in the pew listening the whole time.
Okay. Yes, Callum.
Martin, I was wondering if you give some indication of the chronology of when sort of you brought things online, as it were. You said you started first of all with children, but at some point you employed a youth worker, at some point you brought in a digital projector,
sure.
And all those kind of things. Can you give an indication of that?
Yeah. Well, as of next week, I'll have been there 14 years, so that gives you, you know, a feel for that. Everything I read tells me that you do not have a successful ministry in less than 20 years. And I believe that, you know, the more and more so. So I'm in this for the long run. I think we're just starting, but I think there's a potential for our church to go supersonic, you know, within, but that's still to come. So 14 years I've been there so far, and I think we started with children's work and with the whole sense of fellowship. There was no prayer at that time. There was no Bible study groups. So one of the next things after that was beginning groups, which are now getting stronger. I think the last time the groups met before Christmas, there'd be about 100 people meeting in home groups. Digital protection we've been doing for about 7 years or something like that. And the team ministry for about the same kind of length of time now. Sorry, was it Callum?
Yes, yeah. Callum.
You see, the thing is, there's no master plan. I mean, you know, I mean, it's kind of made up as it goes along in that respect, and always just trying to keep open to God and to where he would lead us next. My Kirk session are quite delighted with where the church is, and there's this huge temptation for them just to say, this is great. We're better than the next church. And I have to keep saying, that's not good enough. Good is not good enough. Great is what we're called to. And I'm always keeping that before them. Never complacent about, oh, this is great, this is cosy. Always that God's leading us on to new territory. And as long as there's still thousands of people in our broth who know nothing of it, then, you know, the job's still there to do.
Another good talk would be his nurturing of the Kirk session. Let me tell you, it's very exciting where he's gradually taking them little by little. And some of them are rather alarmed. Donald, George.
You mentioned Rick Warren. Was that where you got a lot of your ideas?
I read Rick Warren, and was quite affirmed by a lot of it, because I think we were thinking along the same lines. But I've never had an original idea, I don't think. I steal from anywhere though, and I read ferociously. I go on every available conference to learn from people. Willow Creek Conference, and this year I'm going to North Carolina. Maybe some of you have heard about that conference in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm just hungry to hear what other people are doing, because there's always something to learn. So yeah, we've picked up stuff from Rick Warren, but stuff from, you know, Timbuktu and everywhere else in between. You just can't take Rick Warren or something like that and say that, oh, we'll do this in our broth, you know. But you can still get good, great ideas from what these guys are doing.
Any other questions? Klaus.
Can you just maybe follow up from what Alistair said earlier? I'm very excited about what you said. Again, it's in tune with a lot of my thinking. But it's a question for David, actually. You've always got a particular personality, particular gifts. I'm not sure that could ever happen in my church, because I'm different from you. Or could it happen?
Martin is a very creative person, and I can see in the providence of God the way in which Sheila Dunphy and her husband came to our broth, the way in which Alison and her husband, Alison Davy, came to our broth, and the way in which Linda, the community worker, came, and the way in which Lorna and I came. I mean, I just see, and Martin said this to me several times, God has just brought us together, and we just stand amazed at these providences which have come. I think one thing that he's underplayed is his preaching. I mean, he's doing a series on Ephesians just now, and it's really exciting, and he's taking about 9 months to go through Ephesians. But the sort of thing he inflicts on me is, he says to me, I wonder if you could produce an 8-page booklet, a summary on Ephesians, give us an outline and a summary of each paragraph, and we'll get them printed off, and every member of the congregation will get one. So, can you have that for Sunday? And then, you know, the day of the tsunami, he phones me up and says, could you produce an A5 page on why God allows this kind of thing to happen, and we'll hand it out with the order of service on Sunday.
The good thing is Dave is able to say, here's one I prepared earlier.
Edna, you're wanting to ask a question.
Oh, you mean for me?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just to try to have everybody in the congregation having a sense that they've got a job and a purpose. So, I mean, I'd love to read more newspapers and check websites and all of that stuff. I do a bit of it, but there's not enough time. So we've got various elderly people who can't really do anything actively, but one reads a Scotsman, one reads the Herald, one reads the Guardian, and so on. And then at any time they see anything that's religion, church, God, or anything that might be, they clip it out and give it to me. So I'm getting every newspaper covered every week, and you just get it in an envelope, and then I can just trawl through it from there. It's a great idea, and it saves a huge amount of time and work, and it makes you look quite smart.
We've time for maybe another two questions. Sam, I think were you just scratching your ear?
Well, it was about the resources for multimedia stuff. Their own website,
yeah.
The Region Church Network, yeah. Produces a lot of that.
Absolutely. We're a member of RUN, and I mean, this is a growing thing. I mean, Neil Urquhart here in Irvine is well down that road as well, and there's a growing number of churches that are exploring that direction. And I think what we need to see is a greater sharing of these resources. Like, for instance, you know, that song and slide, you know, and presentation that went with it. I mean, you know, we can make these things available via a shared website for other congregations to use. That one was very particular to a time, but much of what we do could be used by anybody, any time. And we've no interest in copyright for ourselves, so anything could be made available, and we need to do more sharing of resources here.
Alan.
You mentioned monthly contemporary worship. When do you do that, and what's it like?
It's Sunday night. We started doing it at 9 o'clock, although we brought it back to 8 o'clock. It's all contemporary music led by the band. On a Sunday morning, it's a mixture. People say you can't do that. Rick Warren says you can't do that. He says you must go for one or the other. We don't. We marry them all together and just make a big mixture of, you know, Wesleyan hymns and this and that, and then Matt Redman and Graham Kendrick, and just throw it all together. But on Sunday night, it's all contemporary led by the band. It's very experiential. We'll always give people the chance to be doing things by way of, I don't know, lighting candles or spray painting a prayer onto a backdrop or something like that. And there'll always be opportunities in these services for groups. So rather than, you know, there'll be a short message, but there'll be much more getting people talking and about how they feel and where their lives are at the moment and that kind of thing.
We get about 70, 80, and half of them would be under 30 and half of them over 30. Okay. Martin and Alison have to get back for the midweek, so really just remains for me to express on your behalf our thanks to him for coming and sharing with us. We close in prayer. Father God, no doubt some here have been listening to Martin and they're perhaps cast down by what they've heard, as Klaus has brought to us the question, could I ever do that? We thank you that you waste absolutely nothing of the gifts that you have given to us, the kind of people we are, and you use absolutely everything, all of our potential. In fact, we can never find our full potential until we hand ourselves utterly over to you and surrender to you. We pray then that you will enable those here whose hearts have been made hungry to look for ways in which they can seek to follow the pattern of your word, particularly that little passage that Martin preaches on every year, Acts chapter 2, 42 to 47. We pray, Father, that that will be key and crucial. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the breaking of bread and to fellowship and to prayer. And the church was being added to daily with such as should be saved. So we thank you for him, and we pray that Alison and he will have a safe journey home, and that you will bless the Bible study, which will be looking at Ephesians 2 and the first two or three verses this evening and discussing it, and all those who gather, and then the 30, 35, 40 minutes of prayer for your work in St. Andrews, in our community, in Arbroath, and in Angus, and in Cambodia, and other places that we remember in prayer. Be with them, we pray. And continue with us as we share also this evening and pray together. Hear our thanksgiving and grant, Father, that our lives may continually be laid before you, and that we may, as we've heard from Sinclair, as Christ himself grew in favour with yourself, the Father, and with men, may we too follow Christ in that, by your grace, and again for your glory, and your glory alone. That's so important. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks, Martin, so much. Alan's a challenge.